Good morning to everyone. There was a song chosen this morning, 383, and those are sobering words. I wonder how many of us would be willing to be honest. Verse 2, where is the blessedness I knew when first I saw the Lord? Where is the soul refreshing view of Jesus and His Word? The dearest idol I've known, whate'er that idol be, help me that idol to dethrone and worship only Thee. So shall my walk be close with God, calm and serene my frame, so pure a light shall mark the road that leads me to the Lamb. The title of this little story I have today is called The Self-Absorbed Bride. The Self-Absorbed Bride. And you can be sure that any young man who is getting married would be thrilled to know that his bride-to-be is self-absorbed. And if you think that statement is false, that's exactly what it's meant to sound like. It is false. So this is something that I've been thinking about for about the last half year. Little things I've heard around here. This is not meant to put anyone down. This is not meant to make anyone feel bad who has any of the physical traits that will be described in this little story. And all allegories can break down when examined too closely. So the verse that makes me think of all this is 2 Corinthians 3:18. But we all behold the glory of the Lord with His face open, and we are changed unto the same similitude from glory to glory, even of the Spirit of the Lord. By beholding, we become changed. And what we behold, we change into. So this is more or less the thought. Now, this verse is somewhat obscure in the way it's translated. The King James references a mirror. There's many translations that reference a mirror. But the thing you need to remember about a mirror is that it reflects. A mirror reflects. And there's two others I will not name. The translations, I don't have any respect for them, but I feel like they do a good job of actually saying what it is here. And we all, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. Another one, as all of us reflect the glory of the Lord with unveiled faces, we are becoming more like Him with ever-increasing glory by the Lord's Spirit. And that last one runs very, very parallel to the German, which literal translation from the German is, but in all of us is reflected with uncovered face the Lord's glory, and we are becoming more and more like unto His image or picture from one glory to another, this from the Lord who is the Spirit. And so that's the sense that I get from this. The point being, as we look at the Lord, as we examine the Lord, as we absorb the Lord into our life, we become changed. I strongly want to stand on that principle. So all I have left is a little story. In the long ago, our first parents lost their riches and their native land. In the course of time, our first mother gave birth to several children, all daughters, the oldest of which was named after the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. She is a tall maiden, leggy, fond of flaunting her form, though somewhat more comely from a distance than close at hand. Other sisters there were. Some have passed on, but others are very much alive to this day. Each of them worshipped their own begotten deities and sacred objects, and so passed their time in the vanity of their own minds. They vary widely in appearance by differing skin tones and levels of modesty. each one doing that which is right in her own eyes, with her own method of worship, and no one really caring about anyone else so long as they each mind their own business. Now, there was another of their sisters, the youngest, a sad and lonely child she was. Not only was she born with a twisted leg and a hunched back, but she also had several fingers missing on one hand. As if this wasn't bad enough, she was also deaf and mostly blind. Such a sorry specimen of humanity, barely fit to belong to the human race. She was the offscouring of the earth, cast into a field by the side of the road. To quote Ezekiel 16, verses 4 and 5, "In the day of thy birth, when thou wast born, the string of thy navel was not cut off. Thou wast not bathed in water to make thee clean. Thou wast neither rubbed with salt nor swaddled in cloths. No man regarded that so much as to do any of these things for thee, or to show thee such favor. But thou wast utterly cast out upon the field, yea, despised wast thou in the day of thy birth." This child's name was called Despised Outcast, and she did not have much going for her. How she managed to make it from birth into toddlerhood, I shall never know. However, the God in heaven above saw fit that she survived into her teenage years. And as I wondered and considered what should become of this monstrous, God-forsaken human offspring, I saw the God of heaven consult with his Son. I wondered what they could be talking about, but soon realized that they were directing their attention towards this daughter called Outcast. No one had taught her any manners or any of the common courtesies that make of any woman a lady. She was not what men would consider conventionally beautiful. She was, in fact, more animal and instinctual than most of her sisters in the cultures they had created for themselves. Yet the God of heaven looked upon her in pity and determined to make of her a bride for his Son. And make no mistake, he would not be satisfied with anyone but the best for his Son. His Son's bride must be perfect, a glorious bride, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blame. Now you may be starting to think, as I am, how impossible it would be to match the prerequisite qualities with the material available to work with. And to be sure, you and I are thinking correctly. Unless, no wait, what if there was to be a miracle like in the fairy tales where someone waved a magic wand and poof, the miserable creature were to be changed in an instant into a beautiful princess just waiting for a knight in shining armor and true love's first kiss. But no, this does not seem to be God's way at all. First off, the Son of the God of heaven is only looking for a wife that truly loves him of her own free will. The magic wand treatment, besides being unrealistic, is not really fair for the person that is directly affected. Everything is done for him, and is done so immediately without ever having to think of the consequences. Furthermore, there is almost always a desperation accompanying such transformations, that at the stroke of midnight, all of the changes will revert back to their former misery in the blink of an eye, unless something almost unattainable can somehow manage to happen before then. Alas, this is not a realistic, permanent way of dealing with the problems that sin brought upon the human race. Instead, before the foundation of the world, the God of heaven and his Son had decided on the proper way to redeem this daughter to themselves. So in the fullness of time, born of a virgin, the Son of God, of the God of heaven, came and gave his earthly life to pay for the price of the sins of humanity. Thus he was able to become a capable kinsman redeemer for poor little Outcast. When the Son of the God of heaven stopped by to speak with poor little Outcast, she was much afraid. She had heard rumors from her sisters that men only want to take advantage of any woman they can. However, there was something in his voice that called to her, to her very heart. Something deep inside her knew that he was to be trusted, that he would never force her or beat her into submission. She secretly hoped he would stop by again. She had nothing much to live for anyway, just her own filthy rags of righteousness and what little pleasure she could get by way of indulging the senses of her broken and disfigured body. But the God of heaven saw the small desire beginning to grow in Outcast's heart and sent his Spirit to breathe upon her and turn her heart toward his Son. The next time the Son stopped by to see her, she was much more open to his concern for her. He asked her how she was And she, being rather uncouth and frank, told him that she couldn't believe no one had stopped to talk and ask her these questions before. He replied that, well, he was here now, and that she needn't fuss about the past, for today was the day of salvation, and this day, if you hear his voice, be not hard-hearted. Suffice it to say, after a few more visits, she had softened enough to allow him to touch her eyes and ears to restore sight and sound. She was now much more aware of her surroundings and her physical disfigurement, especially when in the presence of the sun. He practically glowed and was such a picture of warm, redeeming love and long-suffering patience. She began to long to be with him more and more. The day came when she was finally willing to lay down all her arguments to herself about her own unworthiness and uncomeliness and her complete ignorance of manners. She told him that she wanted to learn of him and become like him. He was delighted and told her so. He told her that his father and he had been hoping she would come to this place, and that he looked forward to cleansing her in the fountain of water through his word. He wanted to take her as his bride, loved and cherished, to his home forever. Well, it didn't take long for her to warm up to this idea. Remember, she didn't have anything to live for anyway. So she told him that she accepted his offer. He told her that he was very glad to hear her say so, and proposed to her that very day. She said yes, and said that she couldn't wait. He told her that she would need to have patience and allow him to work in her heart and her life. And when he saw that she was ready, he would come for her and bring her to the marriage. In the meantime, he said, she needed new clothes. Her old robes of righteousness were discarded, and she was clothed with clean white linen. She needed a new name. Her old name, despised outcast, was no longer valid, since she was now accepted in the beloved. There is a name in the French language that means exactly that, beloved. That name is Amy, so that is what we will call her from here on out. No offense to anyone here with that name. Amy was to have new clothes and a new name. She was also to have many other new things, things that require patience and stick-to-itiveness. And these things do not necessarily come easily. Things like new habits, new customs and manners, new attitudes, new friends and new entertainments. She was no longer to hang out with her former acquaintances, the rats and vermin she was accustomed to running with. She was to apply herself by his grace to acquaint herself with his book, in which she would find all sorts of hidden treasures and tips to allow her heart to be changed by his spirit. She was to spend her time here, absorbing his life into herself. His outlook on life as a servant, not a king, would help to change her selfish attitudes. His complete dedication and obedience to his father would affect her entertainments. No longer could she be amused at that which she knew ran counter to his father's will. This was a simple time in her new life. She was amazed at his love for her. Her name was written in the Lamb's Book of Life. She was very blessed and overwhelmed. She couldn't help but share this love with everyone she met, including her sisters. It mattered not what anyone said. As long as she was assured of his love, nothing could stop or dissuade her. Years went by. As Amy kept gazing into the perfect law of liberty, she became changed. Her hunched back slowly straightened, and her twisted leg was healing. It was obvious to any honest observer by how she could now walk without much of a limp at all. Grace through time kept working in her heart. She was no longer her old self at all. She had a kind and generous heart and loved reaching out to others. She didn't take compliments to heart, but instead redirected all the praise to the one that loved her so. She hadn't even noticed that her missing fingers had even started to grow out where they had never been. She was truly being changed from the inside out. She was so thankful to her Savior. Alas, although this was the way the God of heaven and his Son had planned for her, this was not according to the desire of the great deceiver. He had long ago rejoiced over her when she was poor little despised outcast. He had been at a loss to see how the God of heaven and his Son had taken such an interest in her. He could never imagine her being free of the constant pain and the fear and torments that plagued her day and night. He tried to make sure that her fear and torment were kept up, but lost this ability when the son, after a few visits to her, had bade him desist. Now to see Amy prosper like this was to him both unbearable and unconscionable. First, unbearable in that the deceiver can never appreciate anyone genuinely enjoying themselves by doing right or doing things against his way. Second, unconscionable in that the deceiver cannot allow anyone to go against his way of doing things. It makes him feel powerless, which he is, and defeated and worthless, which he also is. So he determined to trip her up. He tempted her with former companions and entertainments. Although she at times gave in, she promptly repented, crying, "O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this body of death?" And every time the answer came back, "I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord." He tempted her with old attitudes and manners, but these seemed very loathsome and unrefined to her now, and she couldn't stand to be in such a depressed state for more than a minute. So she easily threw these things behind her in the name of the Son who loved her and washed her from her sins. The deceiver saw that to truly get at Amy, he must get her to be puffed up and proud of her accomplishments, even though she didn't actually have any of her own. All her new works of righteousness were done because of the great love she now had for the Son, her bridegroom. The deceiver would have to persuade her that these were her works and that she was now getting to be quite mature and beautiful. There was an element of truth to the deceiver's words. Amy certainly had become quite stunningly beautiful. Her posture was good. Her limp was gone. Her missing fingers were mostly grown in. Her eyes were sharp, and her hearing was never better. She was indeed becoming a gorgeous, full-figured bride, the pride of her soon-to-be bridegroom. The works that she performed were also her own works of faith, but they were not truly hers in the old sense of the word. They were her works in response to the Son's calling and wooing on her life, so they were also his works partly. However, the deceiver quickly managed to gloss over this small detail. He wanted her to take a look in the mirror and tell herself what she saw. By one way or another, I'm not quite certain how, but he did manage to get a mirror into her life. She did look, and she did like what she had become. She still looked with some regularity into the book her bridegroom had given so that she might remain acquainted with her beloved, but she did this with a somewhat lessened intensity and passion than at first, and lately she has frequently neglected this altogether. The more time she has spent looking into the mirror, the more she has started to notice her physical flaws. For what she did not realize when the deceiver first provided the mirror was that he did not intend for her to admire herself for long. Instead, he wanted her to start finding fault with herself and the work on her body that has not yet been completed. In this way, he could induce a cycle of discontent, loathing, quarrelsomeness, not feeling like looking into the bridegroom's book, no longer feeling loved, no longer being changed, and forever around it goes. As Amy has seemingly forgotten her purpose of redemption as a bride for her bridegroom, most of the radiance is gone from her daily life. Her back has been bowing again, and her limp has come back quite badly. The new fingers are shriveling and in danger of turning black and falling off. She has been in contact recently with a doctor of great fame, Dr. Reason, that has promised to help with a back brace to help maintain her posture, and either a leg brace or, if need be, crutches of holiness, because, says he, we can't help how we are made. We can't expect to change our heart. We can only work on the outside, and we need to keep up appearances to avoid discouraging others. Besides, God helps those that help themselves. And his assistant, Nurse Sensible, has been helping Amy deal with a few fears and torments that have cropped up here and there. Nurse Sensible has quite a large pharmacy at her disposal and is pretty sure that there will be something available to take care of any symptoms that crop up in the future. There has also been talk of a facelift to correct the wrinkles that have started appearing, and possibly an arm amputation and a prosthesis fitting to correct for the new fingers that no longer seem to be thriving. It goes without saying that today, unless Amy breaks free of the spell of the mirror and can see the bridegroom and his love for her unconditionally, she is doomed. I also have hope for Amy, For the God of heaven and his Son have a strong longing toward her. She will have a hard time just walking away from everything they have done for her, and with their continued efforts, they seek to reinstate her to her former glory. I am convinced that if Amy were to look to the God of heaven and his Son once more, and take in hand that wonderful book she has been given, her life could yet reflect the glory of her Lord and Savior. Her back would be straightened and her feeble knees strengthened. She would be made whole, completely whole, as a bride adorned for her husband. Have you observed any of these things in the beloved? Will you join me in sincere prayer for Amy? Will you pledge to do your part and gaze at the Lord instead of the mirror? The Lord, no doubt, is a spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. But we all behold the glory of the Lord with his face open and are changed unto the same similitude or likeness from glory to glory, even of the Spirit of the Lord. That's all I have. I would like to sing song number 337.